Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome, world, to Director's Cut. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this November 27th, 2022. I have your program director, James J. here. I am joined by our head of production, master of sound, my partner in art, Seth Habhager.
I'm glad to know I'm the master of something. That's all I wanted to know was be a little bit. I'm a master of sound, everyone. Yeah, actually, I kind of wish I was.
That'd be kind of cool, right?
Could, like, do volumes outside. Everyone be quiet now.
How about that for a superpower? Like, your superpower is sound. Like control
storm, of sound.
Like storm with weather. Like, yeah. You're like, that was sound. I like that.
That would be very cool.
Speaking of superheroes, we're going to get into that a little bit later and actually talk about a really interesting topic of how long a show should stay on the air. And
yes.
If there is a correct amount of time for this, is there a formula for it? Is there any rhyme or reason to it or anything?
Fascinating discussion. Something I've thought about quite a bit, probably more than I really needed to, but... But now we get to talk about it. It's great.
That's going
to
be fun. Yeah. We'll do that a little bit later. You know, we're going to start off the show talking about new in theater, new TV, new on the small and big screen. I did want to remind the audience, though, this is your show as well. Mm-hmm. Seth and I run it, maybe. We push the buttons and everything, but you guys really make this show move.
That's right.
You know entertainers. You know actors, writers, singers, photographers, game makers, bloggers, all of these people. These are our people. These are the people we want to have on the show with us. So we encourage, whether it's you or it's somebody you know, reach out to Seth or I, reach out to our station, let us know, and we'll get you on the air with us on one of these shows.
If it's anything that has to do with entertaining another human being, we really seriously want to put it on the show. That's what we want to do.
We want you to guys have some fun with this and keep this, of course, not only moving, but local, because that's what this is all about, is supporting local artists and local musicians and that. And we've got some of them joining us in the next couple of weeks.
That's right.
Got some really good holiday stuff coming up on the show here, mm-hmm. so we're looking forward to all that. Let's dive right in, Seth.
Let's get into
what's new on our small screen first. Some fun stuff coming up that has come up this week already. The new Wednesday show that's an Addams Family spinoff about Wednesday Addams' time at Nevermore Academy. The young up-and-coming Jenna Ortega is playing Wednesday.
Okay.
You have the role that Christina Ricci helped make famous, of course. Back in the day. The rest of the cast includes the magnificent Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia.
Nice.
That's a get right there. That's a big name star. One of the greatest character actors I think I've ever seen in Louis Guzman playing Gomez.
Another excellent casting choice there. My goodness.
Somebody who has been making the rounds really since his days at SNL, but has become, like I would say, is arguably bigger now than he was when he went as SNL, is Fred Armisen.
Yes. You know what? It's interesting when he was on the show on SNL, I mean. Because he seemed to have this like weird in between space. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in a ton of sketches, if I remember correctly.
No. He had his recurring characters, but
he
was almost more typecast than he is now, which is weird. It doesn't happen.
He's done all these really interesting projects since then.
Yes.
You know,
Portlandia,
very
stuff
strange
like that.
Show, you know,
yes.
Very quirky show, I should say, not strange, but
if it's quirky, if it's weird, he's usually your guy, and that's why having him play Uncle Fester is probably like the movie. It's usually okay they got the casting right this time. Like that's not the case with the Addams Family. Like going back to the TV show, they've always gotten the casting pretty dead on with this, the TV show, the movies. I have no issue with any of the casting in any of the above.
No,
I just think that modern, you know, every time it's a different thing. The TV show was different than the movies.
Yep.
The movies are different than this show.
Yeah,
so you got to adapt. It's a great cast.
Yeah, it is. It looks like it's a lot of fun. And I'm a decent sized Addams Family fan that I might check it out at some point. Like, and when I say I might check it out at some point, it's probably going to be like a year.
Right? Yeah.
It takes me a long time.
Well, speaking of that, first I should mention that the new Wednesday TV show does have the stamp of approval from my father, which is take or whatever that might mean to you out there. But he's not the guy that usually does that. It's not his kind of show. It's not really
that
his type of thing.
It's pretty good.
So if that means anything to you, that might help a little bit. But you mentioned, I'm going to add that to my list, which means it'll be probably a good year before you get to see it.
Yeah, probably.
Seth and I were talking earlier today about the Andor wrapped up this week.
Yes.
And the series finale of that, our season finale of that was.
Yep.
And how, you know, how different this Star Wars show was compared to the others, even recent ones like The Mandalorian or the Boba Fett one or the Obi-Wan show. For one, I felt like going into this, like first couple scenes of the Andor show, oh, this is a this is like, it's not just a prequel. This is like a period piece show. It's kind of like when we do movies nowadays about the 1800s or anything like that.
Right, exactly.
It's a little like that for the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
And then some of the things that they touch on with this show, it's so it fits modern times. And then the acting, which is just on a different level. It's incredibly well done. I've seen the whole season now, and not spoiling anything. Yeah, it holds up. Like, right, everything, if you've been watching from the beginning, you're going to be happy with at least that they kept the same level throughout the whole show, throughout the whole first season.
And that's really good. The thing I liked about it the most was how it felt like a TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you could, some of the other, as good as they are, I love The Mandalorian, I love the Obi-Wan series. As good as those were, they felt like an extended movie, you know, and that's not a bad thing. It's like one big overarching plot and that kind of thing. They might have taken one little divergent tangent here or there. This show has like distinctive groups of episodes.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So you got the first where you get the first couple introduction, and then you get the big episode three, and you get the big show off between the corporate police and him. Very exciting, very tense. It was really a really well-directed episode. Then you've got the whole the heist thing going on there.
Yeah.
And I think we're being vague enough. We don't have to say we're spoiling anything here, I think.
Yeah.
So there's a big heist thing for several episodes. And then what happens to Andor after that and where he ends up. And then it's kind of like a prison break show.
Yeah.
So it feels like that there's very distinctive demarcations of each kind, you know, each part of the show. And that's why I said it kind of felt like more of a TV show than some of the other ones.
I think with this one too, the thing, one of the things that stood out so much to me about it. So it's, you know, for just catching people up, if they didn't know, this is the prequel really to Rogue One, which
correct.
Of course Rogue One is a prequel to the whole start of all of this.
Yes.
Everything that began with A New Hope, the first Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I go into this as a Star Wars nut, you know, and Rogue One I'm talking about. I go into Rogue One. I like a lot of these actors. I don't really like prequels. I don't really do that, but it's a Star Wars thing. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
I'll see how it is. And, my buddy wants me to go to the theater and see it. Sure, why not? I got nothing to do today. I'll go see it. I walked out of that theater mad that I couldn't watch it again. I honestly am not sure. And the longer it goes on, the more I have to debate in my head what my favorite Star Wars movie is. It's always been Empire.
Yep.
Empire's always been it. I love Return of the Jedi, but Empire was the first movie I saw in the theater, so it's got the added bonus to it. And it's just a cool movie, I think.
Yes.
So it's always been my favorite Star Wars movie of all of them.
Yep.
Rogue One is the only movie that has ever kind of made me question that because it's so good. I walked out of Rogue One. I am one with the Force. The Force is with me. I am one with the Force. The Force. Like, I love the movie so dang much.
Yeah.
And I went into it thinking, oh, well, I'm not going to get attached to any of these characters. They're all going to die. I know how this ends. It's a prequel. You know, I know how this ends and everything. And even with that, and even every time I return to watch it, they pull me in, man. I know all this. So this TV show comes about. I'm like, well, I'll give this a shot. But I'm guessing, you know, it's six episodes. I'll watch it. But that's about it. Then I see that it's longer than that.
Yep.
And I jump in. And within the first episode, I have to start wondering, do I like this more than The Mandalorian? Which is one of my newest favorite shows in the last 5 years.
And that's
years.
Super legitimate. It really is. Because of there's a couple of things that they've done in it for me that kind of puts more of the takes a little bit of the gloss off, let's say, of the Star Wars, you know, of the good versus evil, black and white kind of thing. This goes for the gray in like big time.
Yes.
Because not only do you learn about what it costs to be part of a rebellion, what are you actually doing, and what limit lengths you'll go to in order to get what you think is right.
Right.
How much are you going to play their game in order to get there? And it is also shows, the other thing I like about it is it shows how awful the Empire is. We've always gotten inklings of it.
Yeah.
We've never gotten like the bowels. And one of the things I think they did is the Imperial Security Bureau, the ISB, mm-hmm. which is it goes way back, you know, and it was always considered like, you know, the CIA, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And how they're considered, like, they even, a character says that you're the worst of the worst because of what they're willing to do. And it shows you how scary, you know, that situation is. You know, the rule of law is basically gone. It's just whatever the whim is. And so for me, showing the Empire how bad it really is something we haven't seen yet. And that's why I like it so much.
There's a lot of story to tell. So I get why movies don't always do this. But we really don't. Like, we find out throughout Luke, like, as we get to know Luke Skywalker, the things that he's going through in real time right now. The betrayals, the lies, the different things like that. Right. Why he cares about, why he's fighting for the rebels and everything.
Right.
The majority of people throughout the Star Wars universe, we just see them as fighters. And we just see that, hey, they believe in freedom and all this.
And that's it, yeah.
We don't know why they do. And for the majority of Star Wars, we see, hey, there's this evil empire. They want to destroy planets. That's bad. We get that they're bad. Yeah. But you're so right about this. I think one of the biggest things they've done with this and the other shows, and even in other movies at times, is like showing you the details of the sacrifice that people lost and why they are part of the rebellion.
Yep.
Or what are the little things that the Empire does that are so antitrarian, are so just dark and evil.
Yeah, like, right.
They give you that finally. Yep. What if you grew up in this universe and watching these movies, you're finally starting like, oh, that's why, or oh, this does. They do something in Andor between the prison stuff and what the prisoners are doing.
Wow.
And at the end, the last episode, the tag ending, that ties in so perfectly that just you sit back from your laptop or however you're watching it and just, oh my God.
Wow.
And you got to go watch it again. Like, and I, you know, just watch that last tag end again. Because you're like, no, they didn't just, are you telling me? And I want to say it right now. It's so dang good.
Hey. I have not watched the last episode yet.
So you close, better not, man. So close to no spoilers. looking at what came out on Friday, Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special hit Disney Plus. A lot of people looking forward to watching that. I think it's kind of cool. James Gunn noted, it's the only thing Marvel's done so far where there's no villain.
I love it.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And also, if you're a DC fan, I think the more and more that James Gunn talks, the more I feel confident if you're a DC fan that you're going to, I don't want to say like he's going to right the ship and the next movie that comes out is going to take from Marvel or compete like with
that
Marvel.
Level, right? Yeah.
Look, Black Adam is one of the best DC movies that they've had come out. It did great. It it brought $300 million in total in like its run in the box office. Black Panther did that in 2 weekends. Black Panther dwarfed it, like tripled that in 2 weekends. Mm-hmm. It's not even done yet. So if you're a DC fan, if you're in that universe, the bar is pretty low, but also the fan base is right there.
They're there.
They're begging. They're even taking like, you know, movies that aren't. Black Adam was okay, but they're treating it like it was fantastic because they haven't had a lot of that.
What came before, yes, for sure.
And that's pretty much what's new on TV this weekend by the time you're listening to a Sunday night and everything, of course. I want to get into what's new in on the big screen.
Okay.
We got a little time here yet.
Oh,
the segment, right? All right, so Strange World is one of the bigger ones that was released over this weekend. It's about this animated movie features Disney's first gay teen character.
Okay.
It's about a family on an expedition to figure out what's threatening their world's main power sources. Jake Gyllenhaal is in this, Gabrielle Union, Lucy Liu, Dennis Quaid, all voices actors, voice characters in this.
Very cool.
Yeah, really good cast.
Yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal, sneaky good voice actor. great actor. I don't think anybody I think he's one of the five best actors in the world. Yeah. Honestly, I do. Good at voice acting too.
Sorry. I just, because they kind of look similar to each other. I was like, Jake Gyllenhaal is what Jared Leto wishes he was.
Yes. Oh, oh, that is never going to leave my brain. That is so perfect. I hope to God Jared Leto hears this. And I just love the idea of him sitting there. Damn it, he's right. Oh, that's good, bro. Sorry. That was good.
It's too much fun to rag on him. Anyway.
Another great one that came out over the weekend, Devotion, rated PG-13. It stars the if you don't know him yet, you will by next year at this time. Jonathan Majors is going to be a household name.
Oh, yeah.
He's so dang good. He's got the next Creed movie he's in. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's Kang in the Marvel universe.
He will be throughout the going up to the very... to the next Avengers movie in 2 years or whenever. I can't remember when it's going to be. He's going to be huge in that. So
I think people like us know the name Mads Mikkelsen by now.
Oh, yes.
Most people do. He may not be a household name, but you see him and you know, oh, I know that guy.
He's got a very distinct look, yeah.
I think Jonathan Majors is that next guy to do that.
I think you're right.
He was in this show on HBO, Lovecraft County.
Yes.
And he just knocked me out the park with that. He was so good. I'll watch everything that man does. And he's one of those good, like, good stories. This is a guy who worked really, really darn hard to get to this point.
Yes.
And he's not letting... He's got a little Samuel Jackson in him in that way. And like, okay, I worked this hard to get my break. You're not getting rid of me. I'm not going away so you can forget about me. This movie, Devotion, he did is just a really beautiful project. Jonathan Majors, Glenn Powell play Korean War heroes Jesse Brown and Todd Hubner, the Navy's most celebrated wingmen in the earliest days of racial integration for fighter pilots. It's based on a true story.
Wow.
They worked really hard on getting this one accurate, too.
That's good to hear.
Can't wait to see that.
That sounds like a good one, yes.
And in limited release, but it should be on Netflix, Glass Onion, A Knives Out Story. Daniel Craig returns as Detective Benoit Blanc from the Knives Out sequel. Another one of those big casts. Edward Norton's in this one. Kate Hudson, Dave Bautista, Leslie Odom Jr., Catherine Hahn. Great cast.
Oh, wow. An Edward Norton sighting.
Yeah, right?
It's been a while.
Yeah,
it's been a bit. I haven't seen that around. Yeah.
I love like murder mysteries, and I like it when they're really good. Reese, the guy who directed these, he did the Star Wars movies too and stuff.
Oh gosh.
He's really good. Yeah, I can't think of it, but he's really good.
Yeah.
This looks really good too. I'm enjoying seeing Daniel Craig kind of enjoying his career now.
That he doesn't have to be James Bond anymore.
Yeah, yeah. You could tell the pressure's off. He's just really enjoying what he's doing.
Yes.
So I think that'll wrap up this segment, I believe. So when we come back, I want to touch a little bit on the theater game and what's going on in that, and then we'll dive into that big topic, our headline, our main meal for this course.
Yes, this was not it, everybody.
No.
We've talked for 17 minutes.
We have definitely rambled, yes.
We haven't gotten there yet. All right.
I want to talk a little bit about the theater scene in our area, and just a couple of things real quick I want to touch on. So make sure to get your tickets, everybody, because Miracle on 34th Street is coming up on December 9th. They'll have shows on the 9th, 10th, 15th, 16th, and 17th. On that Saturday, the 17th, they'll have a 2 o'clock matinee as well as a 7 o'clock show, all shows being at 7. Mm-hmm. This is directed by Susan Egrin. I think our area, one of the better directors in this state.
I agree.
Let alone for WRCT.
Yes.
We've got a huge list of some of our fan favorites, some of the people we've loved seeing on the WRCT stage for many years.
Yes.
I know that Beth is in the lead role on this.
Yes.
And we're so excited about that and cheering her on. And I love seeing Beth on stage, one of my favorite actors. But got a lot of other favorites in there, too. This is a good one.
This is going to be a lot of fun. Familiar story, I think, for a lot of people have watched it. In fact, if you watched the Macy's Day Parade yesterday, it takes place on 34th Street. That's what that's the street they go down on, and that's where the name of the movie comes from. It's an updated version. It takes place in the 90s, not in the 50s, which is what the original movie was.
Very
it was
cool.
The early 60s. And so there's quite a bit of difference, actually. If you're familiar with the movie... And since now I've helped, helping people with lines and stuff, I've gotten to know the story pretty well, that they've changed quite a bit. And it's partially because of the strictures of theater, of course. Set changes, you can't do quite as much as you can if you're doing a movie or a TV show. But it also adds a couple of things, takes a couple of things that, maybe have been a little old-fashioned from back in the 50s that don't really translate well anymore. So it's a different show. And that's why one of the reasons I encourage people to come see it. And not just because my wife and son are in it, although you enjoy it, but they have, again, one of the great things WRCT does, a great mix of people. We've got the old favorites, you got your Lynn Dagarski in there, we've got all our friends there, and we've got new people.
Yeah.
Fred, one of the main characters, never been on stage before.
Wow.
So shout out to Andy, and this is stepping out there, and he did a great job at the audition, and he's doing a great job in rehearsals, but we love it. We love getting new people to come.
Absolutely.
Lots of great kids in this as well. There's a lot of fun kids stuff in it with elves and stuff. So it's going to be a lot of fun, everyone. I really encourage you to go see it.
Yeah, you can get your tickets and find out more by going to wrctheater.org. It's all one word, wrctheater.org. Be sure to do that and be listening to Morning Magazine this Friday. We're going to welcome in the cast of WRCT's Miracle on 34th Street. Yeah. We'll have Susan Egren, Andy, Chris, Linda with us.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to having them in. That'll be how we'll wrap up Morning Magazine this week, this coming week here.
Yes.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. And a lot of other great things going on at WRCT. We'll talk about those as we get closer to
them. That's right.
But encourage you to buy, you know, support local theater. And speaking of that, that extends as well to our friends at the Arts Council.
Yes.
Sally Kistner and the gang over there, Eric Britnocker running things at the Performing Arts Center. Those two, that tandem, some of my favorite people to talk to, and some of the just greatest people in this area.
They do such a great job. They do such a wonderful job.
Really do. And coming up on December 8th, Rocky Mountain Christmas with Ted Vigil. Rocky Mountain Christmas, those people out there that miss John Denver, this is for you. This is going to take good care of you right there with this one.
Yeah, that's great.
And you had us at Christmas show. I mean, this time of year, Christmas show, Christmas music.
They've had some great ones in the past, the Christmas shows they've brought to this area. The Nelsons last year, I think it was. Yeah. That was such a great show, too. And it's going to be fun. Now, there's no word if the Muppets are going to be with
him. Yes.
My wife loves that album. Oh, she
that's so good.
She listens to every Christmas.
So good.
Yeah.
a big shout out to Sally and Eric. And be sure to join us on Tuesday's Morning Magazine, where they'll be joining us from the Arts Council. We'll be talking to Eric and we'll talk Eric and Sally. And who knows, may talk to Ted. We may. Who knows?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Sally always loves setting up these interviews for us and everything. So that'll be fun. That'll be a really good time. And of course, when we're talking about the CWAC or the Arts Council or WRCT, any of these places, we know that we got a lot of other theater out there.
Yep.
We want to hear from everybody. So please reach out to Seth and I. We'd love to get you on the airwaves. We'd love to cover more of your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as we go along with this show, Seth, another thing I want to start doing is being able to talk about like band updates. Hey, you want to catch this band? They're performing here, coming up. And get some of that information. So get that to us, everybody. We'll also be trying to hunt some of that down, too.
Absolutely. And we're going to find out. There's a lot of theater you may not know about in this area, Central Wisconsin. And we would love to get anywhere in our listening area. If you can get us in contact with people, we would love to bring them on and get an interview and to support whatever they're doing, because that's what we love our live theater around here. And we certainly want to support anyone who's doing it at this point.
Absolutely. So I think that'll do it for now for
this. Because I'm
just itching to get to our main topic. That's all it is.
Well, we will take another quick break here, everybody, and we will be back with shows that went on too long, not long enough.
Mm-hmm.
We will debate it
as
we come back here to Director's Cut.
Welcome back to WFHR's Director's Cut. Thank you so much for joining Seth and I. Hope you guys are having a great Sunday night out there. Our main headline today that we wanted to dive into was, how long is a show supposed to last? How long should a show stay on the air?
The $64 question, I think everyone in Hollywood also wants to know the answer to this question. I think for them, just to kind of start it off with, the business side of things, them, as long as it's profitable.
Right.
They want to keep making money on it. That's what their business is, right? That's what Hollywood is all about, making money. How do we get people to watch our thing so we can get them advertising dollars or the streaming viewers or whatever format you're in right now? That's what they're looking for. Money. That's what they want.
So I think this is something that we don't do as fans very often, but people like ourselves, Seth, we our brains work in two different areas here. We're looking at the creative side of things.
Yes.
And I think most of us would say, well, when it stops being funny or interesting or creatively carrying the characters, the arc of the character dies or fades or whatever.
Right.
Like, it's probably time to wrap things up.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the financial side of things. And a show can be, have a decent fan base, but it's not making money. Advertisers aren't putting on it anymore. You've got the corporate executives that are screaming, hey, this is losing money, we're siphoning money off or whatever and all that.
Yep.
So there's the two sides of it. There's also one other thing I want to add that I don't know if it's common knowledge. It used to be 5 seasons and your show could go into syndication. And if your show could go into syndication, that's where some of the money really is.
Sitting pretty then, yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, with show, a season isn't what it used to be. Because here's another aspect of this conversation.
Again, you're right.
Used to be, every show was 20 episodes, at least 20 some episodes. Yep. Mm-hmm. It was pretty rare a show would be less than that. Now it's pretty rare that a show is 20 episodes or anything like that. Yes. It's weird to see a show on all throughout the whole calendar, you know, TV calendar.
Exactly.
It just doesn't happen very often.
Right.
So that part of it plays into this too. And that's something else to keep in your floating in your brain as we're going along. And this all started really, the question's been asked for since the dawn of TV, but what brought it to our table was recently The Walking Dead wrapped up.
That's
and it got me thinking about this because as it was wrapping up, it's the series finale of The Walking Dead, one of the bigger shows in TV history.
Right.
And nobody seemed to know. Like, I know people that follow the show that I brought up with them. Hey, are you looking forward? Did you see how it wrapped up and everything? And they're like, oh, I'm like two seasons behind, man. And these are like diehard fans.
Yeah,
these are like, so I go looking a little diving into this and everything. And a shout out to Amy Pazin, who put this article together and put this graph out. And it's a graph of their listeners by millions of their watchers, I'm sorry, viewers throughout the history of The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And it started out the gate with about 3-4 million viewers and doing pretty good, especially for a show that's not on syndicated TV.
Right.
It's on, it was on TNT.
AMC.
AMC, thank
AMC,
you.
Yeah.
And they're the same company, so I get them mixed up.
They are all by the same company,
But you're right. Yeah, AMC. So even harder, even more impressive when you think of that.
Yeah.
And then in the peak of their show, they had a couple peaks here where like season 7 and 8, and then I see season 10 also had a high number where you're talking 18 to 20, 16 to 20 million viewers during those episodes.
Each episode, right.
Those are football numbers. Those are NFL numbers. Those are really good numbers, and TV shows just don't get that.
For a cable show especially, I mean, where not as many people, especially nowadays, people are cutting the cord a lot, getting those kinds of numbers is pretty impressive.
When it all wrapped up, the viewers for the Walking Dead series finale, the actual numbers for that. I mean, they drew their largest listenership in their finale bump that they've had that stayed there with like Yellowstone numbers right now,
right,
to give it a modern comparison.
Very good.
That still dwarfs. I mean, it's way down from where they were at their peak. And before that whole series finale thing, we're talking thousands of watchers.
That's
not
it.
Millions, thousands of watchers.
That's it. That's amazing.
So
really,
that's about 4 or 5 seasons of trickle down of that. The numbers going slowly more and more down,
right,
and advertisers pulling from the show, mm-hmm, which affects their budget and all these things. So you look at it and you say, well, how did this show stay on the air for so long? And why did it stay on the air for so long?
That's the question I had in my mind, is that why is it still on then if they're losing this many viewers?
So Robert Kirkman, the guy who created this whole thing, he left the show a while ago. And I believe around the time of the peak hit and everything.
Yep.
Because a lot of people felt, of all shows that should have a shelf life, this is it.
Yeah.
It's a show where basically don't get attached to anybody because they're probably going to die this season.
You know?
Of all shows, we'll definitely have this one. We'll wrap this up in 8 seasons. This is a perfect show. We'll wrap it up in 8 seasons. Then people got greedy. People got greedy. And so why does a show stay on the air longer than it should? I have done my homework on this, and 9 out of 10 times, and I'm not saying that is an exaggeration, though that's my actual number on this one. 9 out of 10 times, it's greed. It isn't the creativeness of it. It isn't.
No.
They'll tell you, hey, the fans are still showing up. The fans are squeaking, and we've listened to the fans, and the fans want this show. No, they're not listening to you. They're listening to advertisers.
Yes.
And advertisers are saying, hey, this show's pulling great numbers.
Yep.
We'll want to advertise on that show, which means we want to keep this show around. So I'm sorry, Robert Kirkman, that you want to end the show. We're going to keep it going.
Yeah.
It's ours now. And we're going to. And then all of a sudden you notice, hey, something changed. Creatively, this isn't the same show that I fell in love with.
Right.
Why is what's going on here? What's changing? The actors are the same. What's different? That's what's different. The show ceased to be about the creativeness and more about the money. And it's a money grab now.
Yeah.
And how much money can we get out of this before we'll just suck every little, we're going to bleed this until this turnip becomes a stone.
Yeah, right.
So it's an interesting time. This happened with Dexter. Dexter was a very well-celebrated show its first couple of seasons. The last 3-4 seasons kind of lost a lot of people. How I Met Your Mother on the comedy side of things, where that was a show just hitting huge
all
numbers.
Cylinders,
then the last couple of seasons just barely had a fan base. Barely people noticed was even on.
If I want to, I'm going to backtrack just a real quick about The Walking Dead. As someone who looked at the whole phenomenon from the outside, I watched a couple of the first season episodes. Didn't like it. I was like, I'm going to pass. I had actually read a couple of the comics that it was based on, Robert Kirkman's comics. Read a couple of those. I was like, not interested. Yeah. I'm not going to continue reading this. Okay. So from someone like me who was an outsider looking in at the whole phenomenon when it actually really hit big and people were like, oh my gosh, a part of it seemed to me a morbid fascination of who's going to die next.
Yes.
And it's like, is this the reason people are really interested in it? Just so they can see who croaks, you know, oh, I didn't believe that. What was going to happen? Oh, my gosh, kind of thing.
It's car crash TV. Mm. And I think what lost me and a lot of people with it is when it became about that. Yeah. About just watching to see what was the jump they were going to make this time. Yeah. And there was a certain character, and I don't think it's a spoiler. It happened seasons ago.
Yeah, go ahead.
They killed off the young boy, Carl. And he was kind of the hope of the show. He was kind of and it didn't fit story-wise. It didn't really add to anything. It just took from things. And it felt like more like, oh, they're just doing this to get the audience.
Shock the audience.
To shock the audience.
Oh, my gosh. Can you believe? Yeah.
And that the shelf life on that is seconds.
Yeah.
Like, after that initial shock is gone, that's all you get.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like the writers got that. I feel like they had different writers for those episodes and the seasons going forward and everything, and it really showed.
And I think this is a problem that modern TV, and in this I blame Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was the first one where they killed off a major character very early on in the run. If anyone had read the books, you know exactly what's going to happen, by the way.
And
but the fact that it happened and everyone was just shocked.
Mm-hmm.
Ned Stark got killed?
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, yeah.
But after that, it seemed like all these shows had to be who's going to be next, kind of thing. Game of Thrones played on that a lot, which was kind of annoying because it's in the books too, which I got through a couple and then I had to stop reading. Yeah. It got to be too much for me. But and I never got into the show itself. Again, watched a couple episodes. Not interested. But it's a lot of TV seemed to go in that way, and they lost a lot of drama because of that. It's all about who's next on the list, the chopping block kind of thing. It's like, is that really that interesting?
It's TV is becoming like news, where news is all about the shock.
Clickbait.
It's all clickbait. It's all about they care more about advertising dollars and viewers than they do getting information to people.
Right.
The days of Walter Cronkite are long gone.
Right.
There's not even most journalism nowadays, like, look at like a police report kind of thing.
Yeah.
When you see people like showing up at the scene of a crime or something, they're repeating what the officers are telling them. They're not doing any reporting. They're just repeating the press release and that kind
there
of
you
thing.
Go, yeah.
Like that's a little what TV's become. The scripted television has become of, hey, how can we shock people? How can we make it so that they're talking about us the next day at the water cooler and all that stuff?
Exactly.
And that doesn't, that again, creativity dies on that hill.
Yes.
All this is, where our focus has been about shows that kind of have maybe stuck around too long.
Yeah.
This is all going on at a time when the longest running TV shows of all time are going on. The Simpsons, of course, 34 seasons, record.
Yep.
Nobody's ever done that before. Law and Order Special Victims Unit is 24 seasons. That's been impressive.
Right.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia is the longest running scripted comedy ever.
Yeah.
And that's
live
going
action,
on.
Yeah.
Live action, yes. Yeah. That's still going on and everything. You had a show like The Good Place that was a comedy that wrapped up in 3-4 seasons. And Mike Schur, the creator of that, talked about how, this is only going to be 3 seasons. They did another season for the fans, but that was it.
Yeah.
They're definitely cutting off right there.
Yep.
So this is a time where it's, you look at BBC television has never been bigger here in America. BBC has always done this. They had like 3 episodes and we're done. That's our season.
That's our whole series. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Series sometimes, let alone season.
Yeah.
They seem to have gotten a good mix of this. So, is there an answer to this question? I don't know, but we're in modern times right now. We're living through the Petri dish example or of what to do with
the
this situation.
Experimenting of that. Yeah, exactly. Well, and if you want to take a moment here and kind of go back into the past and look at some shows that looked, to me, that seemed to be like right on, seemed to really be on. my example of early TV that I think really hit the sweet spot was the Dick Van Dyke Show. Yeah. It lasted 6 seasons, and it was, I mean, the quality of that show from the very beginning to the very end was top-notch. Carl Reiner at his best. Funny. You know, they would throw topical things in there. It was just a wonderful all-around show. And if you ever watch a bunch of them, and you can just see the quality that went into it. And this was when they made 30 shows a season. I mean, right. They made a ton of shows. But it was around 6 seasons. And even by the end, the quality was still there. If they had gone on, I don't know, you know, the best writers hit writer's block. And not everything they write is going to be the top quality. They're going to have stuff that's better than others. Creators in TV, the same thing. So that's kind of like the standard for me is like Dick Van Dyke Show, 6 seasons. In general, my theory is that about 5 seasons. Now, I'm saying that in like traditional shows that have like in the teens mm-hmm. and even the 20s number of episodes. With kind of like what you're saying with the BBC, mm-hmm. you know, these things, they're limited series, basically.
Yeah.
And if it goes well, they'll do another limited series. They're not, you know, kind of thing. Or like what they're doing with the Marvel stuff on Disney Plus.
Oh,
or yeah. the Star Wars stuff on Disney Plus. Yes. You know, again, they're not looking to do these things over and over and over again. They're looking to fit it in the larger universe they're doing. So that's a little different, I think, because it's part of a broader, you know, franchise, I guess mm-hmm. you could say. But I'll ask you an opinion here, and we didn't discuss this, so I'm going to kind of throw this at James and see what happens here. Seinfeld. Was that show on too long? What do you think?
A season long. Probably a season long.
One season probably too just long. As
I wouldn't go much farther than that.
Okay.
And I think even in that last season there were some great episodes and some mm-hmm. good writing. But I think that even Jerry and Larry would tell you that it was probably a season too long, only because they when it's a show about nothing, you even wrap up like you even run out of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
When it's about nothing, I'm so glad you brought up the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
Not just because I love that show and I love that cast and everything. Yeah. And I think it is a really good example of what we're talking about here. For one, when people like Seth and I, when people in the industry romanticize old TV, I think people think we're talking about the subject matter or what they were talking about or what they were discussing right. or how the writing was or something.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is they knew they had a blueprint. They had a blueprint for TV and yes. how to do this.
Yep.
And it was working and it was great. And then advertisers started getting involved more and producers started getting involved more. And it just kind of like got all muddy to where we are now.
Exactly.
Where I feel like streaming is kind of correcting a lot of the things that cable got wrong.
Yeah. Oh, boy. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah.
But that show and the way what you said there, like I think that's the thing that we miss the most about good TV is it felt like they had more of a blueprint. It felt like you had all working pieces. Everybody knew what they were doing.
Right.
The props people, the casting and the camp makeup people, the writers, the producers, the actors. Everybody was on the same page. It doesn't yep. feel like that as much anymore. And it's interesting you bring this show up again, also because it was 6 seasons. And as far as anybody, like, there's no magic answer here.
No, there's not.
But that is what they're saying is the magic number is 5 to 6 seasons. That's how long a show should last. After that, it probably runs its course.
Right.
There are outliers that we were giving you before.
Oh, right, yeah.
A couple of them, but not many.
Yeah.
And I think that even the people on those shows would tell you, you know, we've had some bad episodes here and there.
Of course.
Biggest Simpsons fan there's ever been right here. And I've never seen the Simpsons episode that I didn't enjoy, but I'll be the first to tell you there have been had plenty of episodes that, you know, they're just phoning it in. There's they're just kind of like, yeah, there, yeah. But I will say too, the last 2 seasons, there have been episodes that are some of the best in the franchise's history, nice. In my opinion.
Yep.
So I'm very thankful that they've kept around. Mm-hmm. But that stems from them. They've also been really smart to like, hey, we're not going to keep doing the same old thing.
Exactly.
They've updated. They have grown.
New creative teams and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, and they've done a good job of funneling that over the years. Like, hey, we are getting stale here. We need to bring some new people in. Very similar to what Saturday Night Live has done.
Oh, you know, that was another one I was going to bring up. But again, you know, when you think about these shows, okay, the ones that have been on for a very long time, Saturday Night Live is constantly changing their cast, their writers. That's one of the reasons, that's one of the strengths of the show is to bring in new blood,
yeah.
is to bring in new voices yeah. and that sort of thing. And that's why that one is successful. I think The Simpsons is very similar.
Yes.
They're not a sketch comedy show, but They might as well be. I mean, because you can change. Springfield changes to fit their needs. It doesn't matter. You know, these people that try to figure out what Springfield actually looks like, forget it. It's not going to work.
No.
Because they do what they need to do with it. That's all. Yeah.
I mean, the Simpsons home, they do it with, let alone the town and everything. Yeah.
What room is Homer sitting in on this? Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's for the joke. That's all it is.
And they're in on the joke, too. I love when they make references to that. There was an episode where somebody's coming to stay at Marge's, and they're like, do you have an extra room? It's like, well, sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. Like, it's there sometimes for certain episodes, and other episodes it's not there.
Where's Bart's lucky red hat?
That's all I want to know. Nice, good question. Good one. The elephant. I mean, yeah, they got a couple of things there that, like, they never really tied up. I think that, you know, as a fan too, like, we're all going into, none of us are producers of these TV shows or anything. So the majority of us come into it as a fan. Mm-hmm. And I think that more shows should do a better job of listening to fans before the show gets canceled. Like, it's one thing, hey, Firefly gets canceled.
Yep.
Fan base reacts, how dare you? And they come out in droves, and all of a sudden Sci-Fi Network's like, oh, shoot, we didn't realize. We were just looking at the numbers.
Yeah, right.
We didn't realize how big this is. Mm-hmm. So, they adjust to that. But listening before you get to that point, I think, is key to this conversation.
Exactly.
These bubbles that these producers and a lot of people live in, getting outside of those and listening to a fan base. I'm not saying you do everything they tell you to, because that'll never work.
Yeah.
You're going to have this fan tells you to do this, and this fan tells you to do that.
It would be a mess, right? Yeah.
But I do think listening is only, because all the shows that are successful do that.
Yeah.
I think one of the greatest people in TV history is Ron Howard. Ron Howard, what he did as an actor and everything was great as a kid actor. Yep. He was one of the better kid actors I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And certainly Happy Days and that stuff. His stuff in TV was already set in stone there, his legacy.
Yeah, right.
But the TV shows he's done since with Andy Hurwitz and Arrested Development, things like that.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Where Arrested Development, there's a show that didn't get enough time. In my opinion, mm-hmm. on Fox, on syndicated TV.
Right, right.
And they didn't listen to the fan base until it was too late. And then it wasn't their show anymore, and now it's on Netflix and all this.
Right, right.
That was a show where they listened to the fans, and they took a lot of their notes and everything. And they didn't let the fans run the show, but they listened. Mm-hmm. Jim Henson was great about this. Jim Henson listened to his fan base.
Yep.
And I don't mean just adults of kids. I mean kids and understanding. Snuffleupagus is one of the better examples of doing this in history. For 12 years or something like that, it was the running running theme on Sesame Street. Only Big Bird can see Snuffy.
Yeah,
and all the characters on the show couldn't do that. They see that fans, that little kids that are watching this show, they're nobody believes them when it comes to, like, serious stuff.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Afraid people won't listen to them about abuse and these things.
Yeah,
so they bring Snuffy to life. They make it so everybody can see Snuffy, and this, and the numbers speak for themselves of kids that started being able to be more open to talking to their parents and all these things. To be fair, if you hear that phone in the background, we did not play the originally beforehand. Hey, please turn your phones off. Put your phones on silent before there's. We didn't do that. That's not Seth's fault.
I might edit that out.
No, what I think is, what the power of listening to the fan base, what it can do, mm-hmm. that it speaks. We have the data that it speaks to. I think that while there may not be a perfect answer to this question, I think that is a bit of where you get to that answer, listening to fans.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, we could use tons of examples. I mean, there's great examples of this. And seeing what happened with the Walking Dead, you would think it would be something of a warning, you know,
yes,
to some place.
Yes.
Although we've kind of had these before. I think Lost was a great example of this.
Another
as well,
good one, yes.
Because they didn't know where to go, and the show was profitable, and so they're like, "Well, we need something. Do something."
Yep.
And they didn't do a very good job of it.
No. You could tell, like, when you're a fan of the show, you're even a big fan of the show, and even you can tell that they're just spinning their wheels.
Yep. Right.
You know, there's not really going anywhere kind of thing.
Right.
We're going somewhere, though. We're going to break.
Yeah, we're going to go to break here. We'll be right back here. The director's got to wrap up the show. Welcome back, everyone, to Director's Cut. James and Seth here wrapping up the show. We have a little segment that might be a regular. I don't know. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Called Honorable Mentions, where we recommend something like a movie, a TV show, music. Today we're going to do an album, a favorite album of ours, and kind of tell people why they should be listening it. So I'll send it over to James first.
Yeah, we both got a couple of selections here. I will, just off the top of my head, I'm grabbing a band called Uncle and their album Where Did the Night Fall? The band name is Uncle UNKLE, so okay, spelled a little differently. They're mostly a electronic band.
Okay.
A lot of layers to their music, a lot of electronic stuff, but they certainly use live instruments and everything else. Mm-hmm. They're also one of these bands that have a lot of guest artists on. The album I'm talking about, the Black Angels are on there, L.E.J., Big in Japan, Katrina Ford, Gavin Clark, Mark Lane, a lot of big names, a lot of great like selections that they have on this album.
Right.
When I first got into the album and again listening to them, I happened to be at like probably one of the darkest, if not the darkest point of my life.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And I fell into this album and I fell for the album. And I love every single track on it. I can't think of many albums or many, I'm actually still calling them albums, of course. But that helps my point here.
Right, exactly.
When we say this stuff, and back in the day, my dad would talk about music. It wasn't, he wouldn't talk about singles. He wouldn't talk about liking one song. He would talk about albums that he liked because he could just, him and his buddies, they just put the record on, leave, and step back. And like come back an hour later or whatever to flip the record or what have you. Yeah. Like,
put the needle on the record.
We don't make much music anymore where I could just put this CD on, I could just put this tape on, I could just put this album on and just let it play. We have shuffle. We have, you know, it's that's kind of where we go musically.
We could do our own playlists. You know, with streaming services.
Right.
We have our own playlist that we can just do whatever we want, randomize everything, and which is great. But, man, I'm totally with you. There's nothing like a comprehensive, cohesive piece of music that is the album. And I think that there's still bands doing it today that are like, we want to make a statement with the whole thing.
Yes.
Which is great. I'm glad that's still a thing.
Yeah. I can think on the top of my head, I think, the CDs, albums, whatever you want to call them, that are like this for me. Mm-hmm. Nirvana's Nevermind was like that.
Yep.
I outside of like my favorite band, like Living Color or something like that, where I like all their music stuff.
Yeah.
There's not many albums I can think of that are like that and that have been since I was a kid, since I've been buying and, you know, looking and researching my own music. Mm-hmm. There's very few, even with artists that I love and I like, oh, they got new music, I'm buying that.
Oh yeah.
Not every track I enjoy. And that I can't just leave it on and play it.
Yep.
This album still to this day, because this when I first got into it and it came out at least 10, 15 years ago, somewhere in between there, I still listen to it. I still go back and certain songs listen to, and it's still one of those ones, if I got a road trip and I don't know what to listen to, I just put that on. And I'm fine. I don't have to touch it. It takes care of itself.
And that's kind of the mark of quality for something. If no matter how many times you hear it, how old it is or how long it's been around, you're still willing to toss it in and just listen and enjoy, which is one of the great things about this.
We like letting the audience look behind the curtain and everything.
Right.
And to that point, Seth says to me to start this topic, hey, is there an album you can recommend?
Yeah.
And it's the first thing that pops in my head is I don't want to recommend an album with like a song or two. I want to recommend something where the whole thing I think is good.
Exactly.
And it's interesting, you know, to think of. Because I think if you think of like, hey, do you got anything you want to recommend musically? We'll go to singles or an artist right away.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's very rare nowadays we could say, hey, this album, this whole thing is good.
Yes, yes, that's good.
What about you?
Well, I'm going to go back a little bit further than that. We're going to
I'm sorry. Real quick. One more time. Just want to say that album, that artist is Uncle, UNKLE. Mm-hmm. And the album is Where Did the Night Fall?
Excellent, excellent. Now, I'm going back a little bit further, going to 1982, a band called Dire Straits. I think a lot of people know Dire Straits. A record called Love Over Gold. And it was kind of their preview of their blockbuster that came out a couple of years later, 1985, Brothers in Arms, which was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where all the Money for Nothing
and
Walk of Life came from, that one. Love Over Gold is it's kind of interesting because it's only got, I think, 5 tracks on it. Mostly because the first track, Telegraph Road, is about, I think, 15 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
And it's not only, I don't know if many people know this, but Mark Knopfler, who was, of course, the lead guitarist and the chief songwriter for Dire Straits, started his career as a journalist. And he would write stories about things. I think he even wrote a couple of books, if I remember correctly. And you can tell in his writing. He tells stories in his songs, which I've always admired. When he's one of those guys that will take a topic and just write this really interesting story about it. Well, just about all of the songs on this album are. Telegraph Road is a great one. It's about technology, the progress of technology as it goes along. Basically, talking about new ways of communication. Yes. And at the end, there's a long instrumental part where you get to hear Mark Knopfler's wonderful thumb-pick guitar playing, which, cool. One, again, marvelous guitar player. Mark Knopfler is just so good. It's got another one of their popular songs when they were still touring. Of course, they've been broken up for a long time. Private Investigations, which is exactly what it sounds like. He's talking about being a private eye. Huh. And again, another song where it's got a long instrumental take in it as well. My favorite track on it is one called Industrial Disease, which is very funny. In the fact, he talks about people working in a factory. And I mean, if you're a person who does a repetitive thing over and over, if you've ever worked in a factory setting, you know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It can be, but he takes it in a very fun way. He does it in a very thick Cockney accent, which
nice.
I think makes it that much better.
Yes.
There's a lot of great funny lines, including one that's one of my all-time favorites. Is like, this guy, he says there's two guys that are saying they're Jesus. One of them must be wrong, which is just a great turn of
phrase. Oh,
that is
good. That is.
But then there's a couple other, Love Over Gold, the title song is more of a love song, which is very, very cool. But the whole thing, it's got kind of a melancholy feel to it. It depends on whether or not you can handle a lot of, guitar playing, instrumental guitar playing at the end. Because a couple of the songs are longer, and that's the whole reason why. But if you want to chill, mellow out, it's a great one to slap on there and just kind of enjoy the ride, the historical ride kind of that you're going on.
My dad has that, and I know I've seen it. I don't know if I've heard anything off it. I'm going to have to go ahead and bring that up with him and take a listen to some of that.
Yeah, I'm sure, knowing your dad.
Yeah.
He'll tell you a lot about it.
Oh, yeah.
A lot
yeah.
more than I could here. Definitely. So. I think that's it. I think it's all the time we
wrap it
today.
Up. Yeah. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Please help spread the word about this and all of our other original shows. Let everybody know about it. Strangers, family members, people you haven't talked to in years, high school, classmates, all that stuff. Spread the word about this show and help us support artists. Help us support local and continue to have great episodes of Director's Cut. We appreciate you all so much. Have a great weekend, everybody.